From Decatur to Dunwoody, from Tucker to Toco Hills, from Chamblee to Stone Mountain, this is the voice of commerce in DeKalb County. Now, broadcasting from the Business Radio X studio in downtown Decatur, this is DeKalb Business Today.
And welcome into another edition of DeKalb Business Today. This is the lunch hour. My name is Matt Holmes, along with executive producer Jason Becknell. Ready to talk to two of the top business minds in Decatur, doing a couple different things. We'll introduce them in just a second. But before we do, we want to let you know we are on social media. You follow us on Twitter at DeKalb Radio X. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/DeKalb Business Radio X. Obviously, we're streaming live here on DeKalb.BusinessRadioX.com. You can find our podcast for free on iTunes as well. We hope you'll check all of that out. But without further ado, let's get with our panel right now. Steve Brett, he's our first guest. He comes to us from Presentation Tune-Ups. And I like this, Steve. Your title is, you're the founder of Presentation Tune-Ups. You're also a teacher. Tell us about that.
The truth is that I have a master's in teaching. And when I was a kid, they told me my aptitude, one of my big aptitudes, was to be a teacher. So after 30 years of making presentations myself, I'm now teaching people how to make good presentations.
What's the key? And we'll get into it, obviously, more over the course of the show, but boil it down for us. What's the key to making a good presentation?
The thing is this. Everything's a presentation. I tell people, I will help you make a better presentation. And they say, well, I don't do a lot of presentations. And I say, don't you go to networking meetings? Don't you need an elevator speech? Are you talking to your team internally? Are you making a presentation to an investor externally? Everything's a presentation. But presentations are not just ad-libbed. A good presentation has an open, it has a middle, it has a close, and you're always selling. So the trick is to help people get from point A to point B, and the paradox is you have to start from point B. What is it that you want to accomplish? That's the trick. If you know what you really want to do, and you know who the audience really is, then you can make a great presentation.
Can't wait to find out more about that. But before we do, let's introduce our second guest, Pam McNall, the founder, the president, the head honcho of Respectful Signage. Pam, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
This is kind of a second career for you.
It certainly is, yes.
Tell us where you came from and how you got here.
Yeah, I am a journalist by trade. I was at CNN for 19 years. Great, great career. Learned a lot. You become a mini expert on many, many things as a journalist, and I really enjoyed it. And I actually brought that trade to Respectful Signage. I'm still a journalist, would you believe? I love it very much. I respond to the news of the day. What Respectful Signage is we're in business for business. It's brick and mortar businesses, and we give them an opportunity to have communicate their policies in a respectful way. So if you do not want dogs, it's a nicer way to say, we love dogs, just not here. Or enjoy your cigarette, but just not here. I have different slogans, just not here, just fine here. And the new one that's come on board with a big, big splash is just not right. And that came on board because parents kept coming to me asking for anti-bullying merchandise and anti-bullying signs. So I did a vertical move, a vertical market in my business in order to cater to a group of people that needed help. And I have merchandise available for them. So that's what I'm in the midst of, is producing, again, back to the journalism, producing amazing thoughtful, educational merchandise for PTOs and schools and parents.
And we'll talk more about that coming up in just a second. But for you, is this a passion project? Or is there an educational background where you went to school for this type of thing, this graphic design?
CNN is school. we call it, you know, when I finally graduated from CNN, it took 19 years. It's like a graduate program. You learn everything. I was a graphics producer, produced on the military desk for years, special projects, special programming. You learn a bit of everything. When you're a 24-hour news network, you learn everything. We weren't just producing a half-an-hour newscast at the end of the day. We worked, lived, and breathed news, and enjoyed it and loved it. And I can't say enough about it. It was we were a lean, mean machine because I started when it was hip. I started at CNN in 1990. And that is the education I got. It was just fantastic after, of course, graduating from Boston University.
Well, that's right then when CNN kind of made their name with the Desert Storm. So you're jumping in right around that time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was 6 months at CNN and the Gulf War hit Kuwait. And, oh, it was incredible. I was 22 years old, 6 months on the job, and a Christiane Amanpour piece comes flying in. And all the producers are running around behind me, and I'm taking it in. And there I am focused. And they're like, who saw it come in? Who saw it come in? And they're like, it needs to be on in 20 minutes. Who can produce this? And I raised my, I can. And I produced a Christiane Amanpour piece and got it to air and called my mom, says, watch it. I turned this. It was you're thrown in like the wolves.
You guys were making history at that point. We see 24-hour cable news nowadays. I mean, that's when that got started.
Absolutely.
That's very cool. Well, you're listening to DeKalb Business Today on DeKalb Business Radio. My name is Matt Holmes. We'll talk more with Pam coming up in just a second, but let's switch back to Steve. Again, Steve Brett with Presentation Tune-Ups. You follow him on Twitter at PTunesGuy. Like him on Facebook, facebook.com/presentationtuneups. And, of course, the website, presentationtuneups.com. So we talked about presentations, and I liked what you said because we think of presentations as standing up in front of a room full of people, maybe with a PowerPoint, whatever it might be. But you're talking about discussions in an elevator. You're talking about making that first impression at a networking event where maybe you got 2 minutes to corner
maybe
somebody.
Less.
Yeah, maybe less. So talk to me, is it difficult to get people to kind of think outside of that box when they see a presentation is just me in front of a group of people doing a PowerPoint?
It's very difficult to get them to think outside the box. And the problem is, in a good way, in a bad way, everybody has PowerPoint. So what happens is, when you tell somebody you need to make a presentation, the first thing they do is sit down at their laptop or their computer and open up PowerPoint. And if you know the PowerPoint templates, you get a headline and bullets, headline and text.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's idea of a good presentation is a PowerPoint deck. So the first thing they do when they ask me is, I need to make a PowerPoint. And I go, it's not a PowerPoint, it's a presentation. It's a sales pitch. It's a training session. It's not a PowerPoint. And I go back to that point B, which I talked about a minute ago. What do you want to accomplish? Well, you want to train somebody to do something? Then you're a teacher. If you want to pitch an investor in order for them to put money into your startup, then you're making a presentation pitch. And most importantly, if you're a salesperson, you want to sell something. You want to close a deal. You want to get a new prospect or sign a new client. So you got to start with the point B. What do you want to accomplish? Then start to tell your story. And I'll tell you a quick story. A guy called me up once. He said, I have lost 10 out of 11 pitches. I get RFPs, and I know that I have the best product, the best software, the best team to implement it, and I lose 10 out of 11 pitches. Why is that? And the problem is that most people, scientists, coders, inventors, founders of businesses, they jump right into their thing, what they did, what they've got, all their data, without addressing the client's point of view. And they get so lost in the weeds that they forget the benefits, the features and the benefits. And I said, so let's back out. Let's see what you offer, why it's better than the other guy. And that's where my 30 years of ad experience comes in. We position you against the competition, or we position you against somebody else who might not understand what you do, and explain what you do and why it will help. Going back to point B all the time. Once we've got the story, then we can make the PowerPoint. So I took this guy out of the weeds, forgot about the software, forgot about the statistics, and just talked about the benefits to the client. Now he closes 5 or 6 out of every, you know, you're not going to close them all, but
oh,
if you
sure.
can close 5 out of 6 prospects, you've had a pretty good month.
I saw on Facebook this week a friend of mine posted something. They were sitting in a presentation, as we're talking about a PowerPoint presentation. You're sitting in there. I can't believe that an executive just did a PowerPoint presentation and read right off of their PowerPoint slides.
Word for word. They read them word for word. And so what happens again with PowerPoint is you're not making a presentation. You're writing your script.
Yeah.
And people will walk up, clutch the podium with their heads down, and read the PowerPoint word for
word.
There's
some nervousness.
There's nerves, of course, and we talk about that. I have three modules to what I do. One is storycraft. You have to tell your story. The next is slidecraft, and we get away from PowerPoint. You can use Guy Kawasaki's Canva, or you can use a haiku deck to make great, engaging slides with bold headlines and great images that tell your story. And the third thing I do is stagecraft, which is standing up, looking at the crowd, getting rid of the nerves, walking around a little bit. If you've seen a great TED Talk, then you know what stagecraft is. They've got maybe 6 or 8 slides, and they talk to people about their subject matter.
Have you had success with people coming to you? Maybe they're nervous speaking in front of a group. Maybe they're a little bit shy in a networking situation. You're able to change that about them?
Sure. And a lot of that has to do with preparation. People are nervous when they're not prepared. I joke around. There are an awful lot of people who say, oh, I've got a presentation due tomorrow. I'll do it tonight. Tonight. And then when you get up there, you don't remember what you wrote. You forgot your notes. You forgot what you meant to say because you're not prepared. If you're nervous, preparation is one of the best things that you can do. Prepare. Write your thing a week ahead of time, 2 weeks ahead of time. Put it aside. Bring it back up again. Rehearse it. And then get to the venue early. Look at the room. See where you're going to be presenting. Imagine it from the audience's point of view. Then, when it's time to go on, you're ready to go.
This is DeKalb Business Today on DeKalb Business Radio. Matt Holmes talking with Steve Brett of Presentation Tune-Ups. Are these some of the biggest mistakes that you're seeing? Are there other mistakes people make with presentations?
You know, the biggest mistake I think we see is people want to work just with the data. They are so sure that the data will convince the audience that they don't work with the other two parts of the decision-making thing, which are the heart and the guts. Let's talk about CNN and Fox for 1 second. What does Fox lead with? What does most news lead with? If it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
That's a shot to the guts. And that gets people's attention. Scientists and entrepreneurs who are sure they're smarter than we are, and they probably are, but all they want to talk about is the data, and they're sure that that will work on your mind and convince you. But it's not enough. You have to talk to people's hearts, their passions, how it's going to affect their kids or how it's going to affect their lives. And then talk to their guts. Does it really matter? Are they in danger? Scare tactics are tremendously effective, a little bit unethical perhaps, but very effective. So the biggest mistake that people make is that they don't try to convince their audience using the head, the heart, and the guts.
What are some of the tools that you can use to make a better presentation?
The software tools, I just mentioned a couple, but the thing that I tell people to start with, you want a tool? You take a pencil with an eraser and some index cards and time. Just start writing down your ideas. Write them down randomly. See where it takes you. The second thing is storytelling. Now that you've got these ideas, bring the stories in that relate to your audience, a business situation, a personal situation, a health care situation. Tell a story. And then you can build the deck, write the script, rehearse. You want another tool? Simple tools. Get your iPhone out or your phone or any handy cam. Take video of yourself talking about your subject.
people don't like to watch themselves.
No, they hate
they
to
really
watch
don't,
themselves.
Yeah. They're their own toughest critic.
And they don't want to listen to themselves either because it makes them nervous. So if I have to sit through it, you ought to sit through it too, and you should see what we see. And as soon as you do, you'll be able to improve your own performance 100%.
Before we jump over to Pam, and we'll come back to you in just a little bit, you did mention the name Guy Kawasaki. Why is he important to what you do?
Guy Kawasaki, for those people who don't know, was Steve Jobs' right-hand guy, bringing them back from the brink twice. He's a marketing guru. He's a design guru. He's the guy who built the feeling that we get when we think about Apple, right? When you think about Apple, you think it's fun. You think it's sleek. You think it's so cool. That was Guy Kawasaki. Of course, Kawasaki made billions, and now he's a VC. So Kawasaki has a 10-point template. I do a lot of work with startups and entrepreneurs, and I'll talk about that, I hope, at
Absolutely,
the end a little
yeah.
more. We'll talk about the Raise Forum. But when startups get involved, same as I said before, they talk about everything in the world. Kawasaki said, I'm a VC now. I used to be a marketing guy. Now I'm a VC. Here's what I want to hear. And he's got a 10-slide template, 10 questions. You answer those 10 questions for Guy Kawasaki, and you can answer those 10 questions for any investor in the world. So we talk about Kawasaki. He understands that, and he's the guy who created Canva, which is one of those tools that anybody can use. If you're a producer, if you're a copywriter, if you're an engineer, you can use Canva to make great slide decks that don't look like PowerPoints.
Interesting. I want to jump over to Pam for a second. And Pam, we're going to talk quite a bit about respectful signage, but it's interesting to me because here on DeKalb Business Today, we have a lot of entrepreneurs who have gone into business for themselves, small business owners. You go from a corporate behemoth like CNN, where you're a cog in the wheel, you probably have a half dozen bosses and upper bosses. Mm-hmm. You're your own boss. You're calling all your own shots. You answer to yourself. Has that been exciting? Has that been challenging? What have you learned?
You know, it's funny. I enjoy it. I really, really love it. It's exhausting, but what I've noticed is one of the most important things I can do every day or at least every week is to step away from the computer and get out amongst the people. Because you can get so caught up in your own world at your desk, in your office, working, typing, working, building, writing, designing, producing, conceptual, you know, you're making this beast, you're about to debut an entire, you know, program, or you're debuting a new piece of merchandise, and, you know, you get caught up, and the best thing you could do is get out amongst other people, talking, sharing, communicating, expressing what's going on. You get more ideas. You know, like I said, it's, you know, I'm in business for business owners, and you know, I'm building products for them. And one of the best things to do is to be out there among in sales, which is very different than journalism, you would think, except for the fact that when you're a field producer, what are you doing? You're selling your story. When you're picking up that phone to get the next interview, what are you doing? You're selling that story. So this was not a difficult transition for me at all. And then you're learning from those people. What is wrong? What's interesting is outside food and drink is problematic for all kinds of bars and restaurants, where people will walk in with their fast food bag of, or their, you know, to-go, you know, soda.
Right.
And people are like, you know, that's so new merchandise. I got to produce new merchandise and I'm selling it. You know, it's wonderful. So, you know, what I've learned is don't get caught up being stuck in your own office. You know, when I had all kinds of people around me, it was a lot more activity at CNN. It was easy to do. When you're working in your own office by yourself or with, I have two colleagues and I have an intern. So I do have people that I am working with respectful signage. But it's still a lean, mean machine. And like I said, the best thing to do is get out.
You were talking, and we met the other night at a DeKalb Chamber of Commerce event. You were talking about getting out, talking to people, and finding out from parents that there was a need or an interest when it came to signage and kind of a marketing plan for the anti-bullying movement. We hear a lot about that in the media. We see a lot of it on TV and unfortunately in our communities. So what have you done? What was their message to you?
Yeah, this is a national epidemic in your backyard. This is a national epidemic at your school right next door to you. And, I'd actually like to dedicate this radio broadcast to an 11-year-old boy named Carter Hendricks. Carter committed suicide from bullying about 4 years ago. A friend of mine just told me about this morning. And he should be a happy 16-year-old working his summer job right now. Think about this, you guys. Just think about that. He should be a 16-year-old working his summer job right now. He should be getting ready for his next school year. And he's gone from us. This is in Walton County. And I'm going to keep working feverishly for Carter because this will haunt and hurt for years. And this is actually a piece of merchandise that we are building for schools right now. And it's a fundraiser for the PTOs, for the PTAs. So we're not just producing anti-bullying merchandise for schools. We're actually making it a fundraiser so you can make money back. And one of them is on cyberbullying, and it's think twice before you hit send, because what you do now can haunt and hurt for years. It can haunt the bullier because you end up a nice person 10 years later and you're haunted by what you did when you were a kid. And that's a fact. It can hurt for years because you've been bullied as a kid and you're a 30, 40-year-old still hurting. It's called a complex post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, they had to separate post-traumatic stress disorder from war PTSD because bullying is that serious that they've actually categorized PTSD. This is no joke. And what happened is I'm making my respectful signage, working hard for my business owners and who are very busy human beings. And I keep getting taps on the shoulder from my parent friends, literally dozens of people saying, Pam, can you make anti-bullying signage? And I'm like, I'm not going to keep ignoring people who are asking me for merchandise. I'm going to make a lateral move and market this. Seasonally, every single year, respectful signage is going to work from July until August is when school starts. September, the New England states have school starting. October is National Bullying Prevention Month. By November, I'll be wrapping it up, and then I'll be focused back on respectful signage for brick and mortar businesses. And then seasonally, growing this anti-bullying fundraiser campaign. So this is never going to go away under the Respectful Signage brand. And I think it will end up being the best legacy we could produce because it actually is, like I said, a fundraiser. And these parents needed it, and I gladly produced it. And like I said, we've got cyberbullying, you know, haunt and hurt for years. Think twice before you hit send, you know.
Have the schools been receptive to you coming to them or going to the PTOs?
Absolutely. We've done, a Google survey, like Survey Monkey, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You know, and we're hearing people are saying, yes, they will, it's incredible, you guys, how many people tell me that they've had experience in bullying. That's why when you read, this is a national epidemic. It's a national epidemic that's affecting you and you and you and you and you, and it's in your backyard. So this whole idea that it's this umbrella thing, but really it's affecting individuals, every single one of us. And so every time I talk with either a school or a superintendent, Dr. Green, mm-hmm. as he was like, oh, we just debuted our bullying website earlier that day on DeKalb County Schools.com or whatever the exact website is, and we happened to catch it that day, and I did see it, and they are focusing on hazing and bullying, and Dr. Green and I are going to have a sit down meeting in the next week or two. I actually sent him an email thanking him for meeting me the other day, and but yes, their website is wonderful. It's a good tool for parents to have to How do you respond to hazing? How do you help your kids with, you know, bullying, et cetera? But the PTOs, the parents are the ones that we're asking and needing, and they're willing to open their pocketbooks. Not a lot of money. I mean, we're talking about a $20 bill. Hmm. You know, I mean, think about, you know, how much money you spend on your coffee every week. Mm-hmm. And this is something where what's interesting about the Respectful Signage brand is that it's multifaceted. We have a speech bubble, a talking speech bubble. What's just not right to you? So it's cyberbullying. It's just not right. Or, you know, bullying is abuse, just not right. So it's ever changing. And now children always need to be challenged. You kids, if you have the same sign up there, they're going to roll their eyes. Yeah, I've been there, done that, seen it. Well, we have signs, decals that can be for the school bus. We have decals, professional, very, do you bully? It's just not right. That's for the principal's office. That's for the auditorium. That's for the common areas of the school. Then we have posters that we've produced that are for the classrooms themselves, for the computer rooms, for the bulletin boards. So different pieces of merchandise for different places, including small bumper stickers, small ones where words hurt. Don't bully. It's just not right. Words hurt.
Well, and
don't
a small
bully.
Decal that you're going to put right there on your kid's computer, because that's where it's happening so much nowadays. Bullying's always happened. But nowadays with cyberbullying and everything else, you put a decal on your kid's computer. Maybe that reminds them, you know, like you said,
yeah,
not to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
This is DeKalb Business Today on DeKalb Business Radio. We're going to chat more with Pam McNow from Respectful Signage in just a second. But Steve, I want to get back to you where we're on the topic of education. You got something really cool going on with the Emory Business School. Tell us about that.
The project with Emory got started. As I mentioned before, I work with startups. I work with entrepreneurs. And these are folks who are beginning a business. We've all seen Shark Tank, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody goes, and they're looking for money to get their business going. Now, startups are looking for early money, angel money, they call it, or friends and family, or friends, family, and fools. But they need to raise $100,000, $200,000 to get their business going. Then they get to the point where they might be at Shark Tank, where they're looking for additional money to take it to the next level. In real life, we want to work at Emory with businesses who are 1 or 2 years in, who have a significant business, who have revenue. We're looking for in-revenue companies, and instead of looking for $50,000 or $100,000, there's a big gap in the middle where businesses need something like $1 million to $5 million. In order to expand their platform, in order to take it from an Atlanta business to a Southeast business, or from a Southeast business to a national business. So we're working with Emory's Goizueta Business School. We're working with some of the top investors in Atlanta to try to create the same kind of climate there is in Silicon Valley. And in Silicon Valley, you can walk up and down the street and find several investors with resources and a network, and ask those guys each to put in $250,000 or $500,000 until you have, say, a $2 million syndicate and the network behind you, a board of advisors behind you, to help you expand your business. And that's what we're going to do here. My part of it is, again, as the presentation guy, because in these competitions, you know, if it's a Shark Tank, you have time on television, but there's a lot of things, tech mashups and ATV and ATDC and TAG. All of these are technology startups, but we're looking for business startups. Sometimes you only get 3 minutes in front of an investor.
Wow.
That's my job, again, to tell people how to tell their story in 3 minutes. You have to explain your entire business, the benefits of your business, the projections that you're going to have to make money, and your exit strategy, how the investor's going to make money, and you have 3 minutes. Now, in our format, we're going to give people 7 minutes, but we're going to put them in front of a room full of qualified investors after we've trained them up. We're working with the professor, the head of entrepreneurship at Emory University's Goizueta Business School, a guy named Charlie Goetz. He himself is an investor and a very successful entrepreneur. He's heading the program. We're working with Barry Etra, who is a guy who has been working with alternative funding, and we're putting together a program where the prospects will come to us. We will train them up, including my part, including their financials, including their business plans, and then we will put them in front of this collaborative group of 25 or 30 qualified investors who want to do what they want to do. If it's healthcare, we'll have a group of healthcare investors. If it's technology, well, we have other people who are doing technology, but we're going to do manufacturing. We'll do technology. We'd like to concentrate a bit on healthcare, and we will match the investors with the prospects, train them up, and try to get the money for Southeast companies, Southeast investors, and raise the level of investing in entrepreneurship in the Southeast.
You mentioned the show Shark Tank, and it's one that I think all of us enjoy. In those types of pitches, when you have the investors in front of you, is it as personal? Is there some humor involved? Is there some backstory involved like you see on the show? Or is it just being peppered with questions about the bottom line?
Shark Tank is not real. Shark Okay. Tank is reality TV. These guys are produced, and they've brought them all on, and they're good fun. And are you surprised?
Are you saying reality TV is not real? No, wait a second.
These guys are very highly produced, and they've been selected, and it's a lot of fun. The truth is that in these big forums, you get 5-6 minutes, you get 3 minutes, and it's one after another. And oftentimes, the investors will be sitting there. They'll see 5, 10, maybe 20 presentations in a day, and they'll be taking notes. And then the next day or afterwards, they will go and seek these people out and ask them questions. There's sometimes a very short amount of time for Q&A, and sometimes not at all. So you've got these people who are getting up there. They have to present in 3 or 5 minutes and pray. We're going to do this a little bit differently. We're going to give them 7 minutes, and then we will immediately give them 7 minutes of Q&A, because the questions will be fresh in the investors' minds.
But part of your job, part of the challenge, I guess, is the fact that if you have 20 investors, or I'm sorry, 20 startups coming in and making the pitch, if you're the 17th startup, I mean, what chance do you have? Everybody's eyes have glazed over.
That's exactly right. And that's the difference, again, in the Raise Forum. We'll only be bringing in perhaps 7, 10 tops, so that the investors' eyes don't glaze over, so that the prospects get a full 7 minutes and a full 7 minutes of Q&A. It's a very reasonable way to try to make that match.
Is anybody else doing this anywhere? Is this based or modeled off of anything?
No, I think the concept is relatively new. I mean, everybody's trying to match prospects, you know, prospect companies, growth companies with investors, and investors are trying to find these companies. We're doing two things. We're taking it up a level. We're not doing the startup, the angel money. We're doing the 1 to 5 million for startups that want to grow. And we're trying to get qualified investors. Remember this too. In a lot of these angel groups, you get a few qualified investors, and you get a bunch of people who are trying to sell themselves to the companies, like lawyers or marketing guys like me, or you know, patent attorneys and such. We're only going to have qualified investors in the room. And the sponsors of the program, again, are going to be the big Southeast players. We're talking to big insurance companies, big banks, people who have a vested interest, like Silicon Valley, in building the whole region. We'll be talking to people from the whole of the Southeast, as far as Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, the Carolinas, people who want to build the Southeast the way the Northeast is built and the way Silicon Valley is built, as hubs for entrepreneurship and investment.
As we get ready to wrap up with Steve Brett from Presentation Tune-Ups, I guess the most important questions about it, when's it happening? How do startups get involved? How do they apply for this?
We're building the website right now. The date for the program will be November 6th. we will take prospects by application only. Investors will find us on the website, and of course, we've already reached out to a syndicate of core investors. So we will be looking for applications online at raiseforum.com. There's a placeholder now, but the site will be up shortly. We will go through those applications, pick our prospect companies, put them through the program, and then Emory will host us on November 6th for our big matchmaking effort.
This is fascinating. I mean, will you come back? I mean, real life Shark Tank. This is, will you come back, bring some of those guys, and we can talk more about it as we get closer to the date?
Yeah, we'd love to.
That's really cool.
Thanks.
That's really cool. All right, Steve, we appreciate it. Want to finish up with you, Pam. You're talking about the signage, not just in schools, but in businesses as well.
Yes.
We live in an ever-changing society. I guess it's multicultural now. So just having signs in English may not get the job done. What are you doing to change that?
It's funny. We have solo no aquí.
Español.
Yes, actually, respectful signage started because changes in law. A year ago, we are a 1 year old, and a year ago, HB 60 gun law passed in Georgia, and because of that, it said in the law, unless the proprietor states otherwise, and I saw a business opportunity, and successful businesses often respond to changes in law, as Steve can probably attest. So I said, there's an opportunity. There it is, unless the proprietor states otherwise. So why can't we say a respectful, kinder, gentler way to say, I respect your right to carry. We respect the Second Amendment, but just not here in these four walls, just not here at my coffee shop. I get it. You know, we live in America. I'm not anti-gun. In fact, I have pro-gun merchandise. We respect your right to carry just fine here. So what happened is I realized that the Hispanic population was up in arms over HB 60 gun law. And when it went off the newspapers, and it was not on the radio and the newspapers anymore, on American or, you know, English
sure.
newspapers, it was still every day their lead for weeks after HB 60 passed. And I said, there's an opportunity, there's a market. So I produced Solo No Aquí, just not here. And that's for a Spanish-speaking community to say, you know, leave it in the car, please, just not here. We respect your right to carry, just not here. So I have not produced every piece of merchandise because, again, the style, if you go to respectfulsignage.com, you will see that the talking speech bubble makes it extremely versatile. So you can, it's ever-changing. And so, obviously, you can keep changing that. Now, every single piece of merchandise has not been made into Solo No Aquí, into Spanish merch, but it can be. So if you ordered it, I will make that for you, no problem.
The name respectful signage, it kind of stands out. But when you think about it, and you think about today more than ever, whatever the political issue is, we're so sensitive. Both sides, whatever the issue might be, we're sensitive. And so if you see something saying, no, this here, and you're a big supporter of this, that's going to turn you off. And I guess respectful, that's how you had the name. You kind of read those tea leaves, I guess, when you started the business.
Absolutely. And, you know, I myself was a victim of cyberbullying. It is, even if you say it nicely, if you feel strongly about something, you can get ticked off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. So you know, I actually had my Facebook page attacked by people that were like, I don't care how well and nicely say it, you're still stomping on my gun rights. And I said, fine, just fine here, you know, purchase here. Here's your merchandise, sir. You know, so I was able to, you know, handle it with care and produce other merchandise in order to keep balance. And, it worked out in my favor because just fine here is actually a really good quality merchandise. I think there's more opportunity with just fine here than just not here. So it actually worked out in my favor. But it's, you know what, think about no shirt, no shoes, no service. That has been around since the 1940s. My parents, who were in their 80s, recognized that from when they were teenagers. No shirt, no shoes, no service. again, no, you can't come in here. No. Well, we love bare feet and shirtless men, but just not here. Just not here. So, you know, there's creative, fun ways to say the same thing. You know what? People are smarter now. It's the internet has changed us. Everything has changed. You got to keep people on their toes. You got to keep kids on their toes. The ever-changing speech bubble is why this business is going to be a success, because whether you're a kid or adult, you're going to look at that and say, oh, I recognize that brand. What's this one say? And then you'll see it at Publix. You go, oh, I recognize that brand. What's that one say? Then you're going to see it on the back of someone's car. Oh, there it is again. What's this one say? So that's the vision I had, and I'm plugging away.
As we wrap up with Pam and Steve here on DeKalb Business Today, what's the biggest challenge you guys face in growing your business? How do you keep bringing in new customers? Steve, we'll start with you.
I think that's the traditional challenge we all face. And for me, social media has replaced almost everything else that I do. My business is decentralized. I'm not a specialist in as much as I'm in a particular vertical. I'm looking for anybody who makes a presentation. So for me, it's LinkedIn and the sales groups, the teaching groups, the investor and startup groups, social media in that regard. I tweeted out the Radio X link before we came on, and I'll be tweeting out the results.
Which we sure appreciate.
After we come off. And as Pam says, it's about getting out of the office and meeting people on a regular basis. You tell people enough, they listen.
Pam, how about you? Some of the biggest challenges you faced in starting your own business.
Oh, goodness. Well, there's a bit of bureaucracy. You know, a lot of times you involve with the copyright and patents and trademarks and the federal government, and that can jump through hoops, but you just keep plugging away.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, when you're working with businesses and business owners, they're very, very busy. You've got to really realize their schedules and when it's smart to reach out to them. So, you know, if you're dealing with restaurants, don't be calling between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. for lunchtime, et cetera. So, you know, you just have to be smart about who your market is and when they want to hear from you.
All right. Pam McNall, she's the CEO and founder of Respectful Signage. Check out their website, respectfulsignage.com. Follow them on Twitter, at Respectful Signs. They're on Facebook as well, facebook.com/respectfulsignage. And, of course, Steve Brett, the founder of Presentation Tune-Ups. Follow him on Twitter, at PTunesGuy, facebook.com/presentationtuneups, and the website, presentationtuneups.com. And again, the website for the Raise Forum
is raiseforum.com.
And that website is coming.
Coming soon. Well, there's a billboard now reminding you of the date. The full website, coming soon.
Very cool. A lot of fun. Guys, it's been a lot of fun to have you here. We appreciate you making the time.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That'll do it for another edition of DeKalb Business Today here on DeKalb Business Radio. We'll see you back here next Friday at 10 a.m. For executive producer Jason Becknell, I'm Matt Holmes. We'll see you next time.